Good evening and welcome aboard flight CKCO TV Channel 13 to Florida, the Caribbean, Hong Kong and Beijing. Today's entertainment is, what happens on the road, stays on the road. So sit back and enjoy. The drink cart will be around shortly.
Hi, my name's Pete McCallum and I indeed worked at CKCO for almost just shy of 21 years. I started in July of 1978 and finished up in, I believe it was April, could have been early May, maybe late March of 1999. And it was perhaps in many respects 21 of the best years of my life, although it certainly had some ups and downs, as everyone's life has, I'm sure. I started as a film editor back when they used to use film in television. News, I started in news, editing film. And they were just making the transition to videotape. And it was a, and that transition wasn't without its issues as well. But started out editing, and then the opportunity came to shoot as well. And I started shooting some news, because I'd started editing news and it just made sense to shoot it as well. And shot, finally left editing after about, I think, 4 or 5 years of editing. And then just after that, for perhaps the last 15 years or so of my employment there, I was exclusively shooting in both news and then later on in what they called production, which was more the commercial end and shows that they would produce, and some in-studio camera work, but hardly any. Mostly it was all field work, be it news or production. And saw a lot of changes in those 21 years with the technology and the way news and other and entertainment was captured and presented to the audience over the air. And thinking back, you know, you have ended up doing a lot of traveling, more so in the production end of it than news, but did travel for some shoots for news. And the interesting thing about being on the road is it's always, it's a challenge enough to shoot on a day-to-day basis in your hometown. Well, I say hometown because I was born and raised in Kitchener-Waterloo. Perhaps one of the, some of the few, not too many people who worked at the station, I believe, were born and raised in Kitchener, although there were a few. I wasn't the only one. But in news, some of the travel was to the States for a couple in particular were junkets to Disney World to cover news items that were happening there, or news-ish items, perhaps more feature. And that was always interesting back in those days, because when you traveled out of the country, and especially to the States, there was paperwork required, and usually you used one of two ways of doing it. One was called a temporary import bond, or a TIB, and the other was called a carnet. And both basically were just forms that you filled out to let customs know that the equipment that you were taking out of the country and taking into another country, in this case the States, was exactly the same equipment that you'd be bringing back with you. It wasn't there was nothing nefarious going on. It was just tools you needed for your job. And it was always a challenge at the borders, because I think both carnets and temporary import bonds were tended to be used more by trucking firms and shipping firms rather than news crews. And oftentimes you'd show up at either the border if you were driving across, or if you were flying across, obviously at customs at the airport. And oftentimes these customs officers weren't familiar with either form, in which case you had a lot of explaining to do, and which always led to confusion, which led to frustration, which led to delays. And oftentimes, I would think that sometimes the customs agents would just let you through after 15, 20 minutes of trying to explain something. They'd wash their hands of it and say, okay, you look like a pretty good guy. You're on your way. There were a few times where crossings could get a little tense. And the other thing with equipment on the road is back in the days when we used tape, it was the cameras and the recorders when they used to be two units often had equipment failures. The one that used to occur the most was oftentimes when you would use videotape, the camera would what we would call eat the tape, and it would either get tangled up in the reels or tangled up in the spools. And generally, it would render the camera essentially useless. And so sometimes you could fix that on the road by yourself. Other times, if it was beyond repair, you were done. And thankfully, in my travels for the station, I had a minimal amount of equipment failure, but I had a couple that didn't work out well and were very frustrating. Perhaps the easiest one to fix was coming back from a Blue Jays spring training in the early 90s. Back then, we didn't travel with the camera as carry-on. It was always checked baggage in the back, and of course, the camera was checked, and the cameraman made it back to Toronto, but the camera didn't. And although you could kind of track it and find out where it was, and it wasn't the cameraman's fault. It certainly was the airline's fault. You kind of knew at the end of the day that it was going to show up somewhere, and it was just a case of the airline following through and getting it to the proper destination. And that's, in fact, what had happened. I ended up flying back, I believe it was through Washington, and on a connecting flight, the camera didn't make it. It showed up at the station several days later. I wasn't too worried about it because it wasn't my camera. It was the station's, even though they had entrusted me with the keep of it. However, I did have an issue one time with the camera malfunctioning, and the story doesn't really have a happy ending. It was while I was shooting production for CKCO. We were shooting a series called The Wedding Album, and it was being hosted and produced by Tino Monte and his wife, Linda Brooks. And I believe it was Tino's production company and CKCO's production End of Things were doing a co-production. And it was a two-week shoot with various stops in the Caribbean, split between two cameramen. John Arias shot the first week, and there were several, I think five or six ports of call. He left after a week. I flew down and shot the second week in the same ports of call, and just picking up different features and interviews and interesting things. The issue was we were on a cruise ship that would sail around to these points of interest. I believe it was Grenada was one stop, Curacao. Can't read my own typing here. Jamaica may have been one. There were several stops. So I fly down midway through the shoot, and we did have a playback unit on the ship that we were on. And after about 2 days of shooting, I went to check some of the tapes that I had shot and noticed there was an issue with what we call flag waving. It's a technical term meaning the top frame of the picture is bending and it's not looking proper. And essentially the footage that I had shot was unairable in that shape. So the tapes that had been shot by the previous cameraman, John Arias, were still on board, and I started checking them, and they were fine when he started shooting, but after about the fifth or sixth tape, the problem started to manifest itself, and it had gotten worse over the course of several days. And then when I showed up, it was getting even worse. So what do you do when you're in the middle of the Caribbean and you've got a camera that doesn't work and you don't have any internet? This would have been 1991 or two. There was internet, but certainly not like we enjoy today. We did make attempts to phone the station from one of the islands, and we got through and were able to articulate that we had issues and basically we couldn't shoot. Although we ended up shooting some stuff, hoping that it was that the camera would magically fix itself, it didn't. The station preliminary had tried to make arrangements to ship a camera down to us to one of our next stops, so that we would be able to grab a new camera and continue on. But when you're dealing with in 7 day cycles, and it takes you 48 to 72 hours to get a camera shipped down there, you're basically out of luck. In this case, ship out of luck. But so we weren't able to get another camera down. We did shoot a little bit, and the sad part of the story is when we got back to Canada. The problem when played on the big full-up playback machines didn't manifest itself in quite the same way. The footage was not 100% perfect, but some of the footage that we shot that we thought was unairable was actually used, but still a good chunk of the footage was unairable, and a lot of frustrations and a lot of gnashing of teeth on that shoot, because really, when you're in the middle of the ocean and you've got issues, there's not much you can do except enjoy what entertainment is available to you. So that's kind of a story of troubles on the road equipment-wise, and didn't have a good ending. But oftentimes, small head clogs, stuff like that, you could actually fix on your own. But it was always my impression that even shooting in general isn't so much the physical act of capturing images on whatever medium you're using. It's dealing with all the problems that come up trying to do that. And successful shoots and successful trips sometimes aren't measured in the quality of footage you bring back, although that's very important. It's the problems and what you had to deal with to get those images. That's really the half the battle right there.
We interrupt our program to say dinner will be served shortly. Please have your food tray ready. Your options are Beijing roast duck, Key West pink shrimp, jerk chicken. We now return to Pete McCallum and what happens on the road stays on the road.
Sometimes when you're out of the station, I know Paul Brent kind of touched on this, you'll be recognized as being from Kitchener or somewhere where CKCO people or CKCO crews aren't supposed to be, because it wasn't in a broadcast area. I was in an airport in Hong Kong and bumped into an old high school teacher of mine. And the reason I bumped into him was I physically had the camera out of his case in the airport because I was dealing with an issue with it. And teacher that I had was walking by and looked and saw the logo on the camera and just about doubled over and came over and said, are you from CKCO in Kitchener? And I said, yes, I am. And he introduced himself and said he was a teacher from Kitchener, Ontario, and he was surprised to see a CKCO crew so far from home. And I was able to up his ante and said, well, I've got even one more surprise for you. I was a student at the high school you were vice principal of, so it is indeed a very small world. I can't remember his name at this point, but I did remember his at the time. Another interesting story being on the road and being recognized, not so much me, because thankfully being behind the camera is being on the right side of the camera, as opposed to being on camera, which is being on the wrong side of the camera. I had flown down with Betty Thompson to Erie, Pennsylvania, to do ostensibly, which was a tour, and I can't remember the reason why we were there, but it was a Shriners Hospital in Erie, Pennsylvania. And we were there to cover something. And if I recall, it was a children's hospital specializing in burns, I believe. And we flew out of Brantford, a Shriner, and I can't remember the gentleman's name. This would be in the late 80s, early 90s, flew us to Erie, Pennsylvania, so that we could go to this hospital and Betty could shoot her sequence. And while we're at the hospital, where they decided to give us a little tour, and we're walking around, and I'm grabbing a few shots just for general B-roll purposes. And we go walking past this ward, and this young kid, who couldn't be any more than maybe 12 or 14 years old, jumps up. He's in bed, and he kind of jumps up, and as we walk by, and he goes, "You're Betty Thompson. I watch your show all the time." And Betty stops and, "What the heck is this?" And I wasn't rolling at the time. I wish I had been. But here's this 12-year-old kid who in Erie, Pennsylvania, whether it was in, and he didn't elaborate whether he watched the show in the hospital while he was there or whether it was he was at home, but he was familiar with Betty. He knew when the show came on in the mornings. And now, Erie, Pennsylvania would be, I guess, within CKCO's coverage at that time. CKCO had huge coverage spilling down from Windsor all the way up to Bracebridge and areas north of there. And it would spill over, obviously, into Detroit. And Erie, Pennsylvania, being on the south shore of Lake Erie, it would come right across the lake. And so I'm not sure whether this guy could get CKCO on cable or whether it was an over-the-air signal, but he knew Betty. And that's the power of television, that a 12-year-old kid would watch something originating from another country. And it was just that there's the power of television right there. Perhaps the biggest trip I was on shooting for CKCO, or at least the one I remember the most, in the fall of 1987, reporter Steve Parr, who was the London, Ontario bureau chief for CKCO at the time, he was reporting for the news out of London, Ontario, got a call from a doctor in London, and I cannot remember the doctor's name, but he was leading a group of Canadian acupuncturists. And there was the world's first international acupuncture conference was being held in Beijing in November of 1987. This doctor from London was taking a group of Canadian acupuncturists over to this worldwide meeting, and wondered if Steve would be interested in bringing a news crew along, because there'd be many features to shoot and interesting stories. And the fact that this was the world's first acupuncture conference, international, was of some news value. And CKCO News thought there'd be enough good feature material and local angle to it that they allowed Steve and I to go over. And we were there about just shy of 3 weeks. I think it was about 16 or 18 days. And it was the experience of a lifetime. And this was in 1987. And although China had been open to the West for not very long, maybe 10 or 15 years, it was still very much an area of the country, or area of the world, sorry, that not a lot of people were familiar with. And I remember flying over there, and we flew to Hong Kong first and spent two or three days in Hong Kong. We shot some stuff there. Then it was on to Guangzhou in China, which I believe was formerly known as Canton. For those of older members of the audience here. And then from Canton, we went on to Beijing, and we covered the conference. The interesting thing about leaving Hong Kong, which was under British possession at the time, and flying into Guangzhou, was that's where we had to first enter mainland China and go through their customs and immigration. And the interesting thing was, when it came time to leave, we had no problem leaving the country after our 3 weeks, but it was getting into the country that was the issue. And part of the issue was we had our visas and everything was all set, that the doctor's delegation had taken care of all that. But when we were flying into China And they realized that there was a news crew with a camera man and a camera with them. They became quite interested in the camera and the videotape that I had with me to record the news items and features on. And it was explained to us later that it wasn't, I kept saying to them through our translator that there's nothing on the tapes, they're blank. We brought over blank tapes to record our features on. Well, they weren't buying that. They were more worried about there being images on the tape already. They were worried about somebody from the West bringing images, whether it be propaganda or pornography or whatever. They were interested in about what information we were bringing in. And I was able, finally, videotape cameras in those time had limited playback where you could play back the tape, but through the viewfinder of the camera. And finally, I had to go through, and we had something like 20 to 25 tapes with us. I had to start showing them each tape to say, there is nothing on these tapes. They are blank. We're going to add stuff to them, but right now there's nothing there for you to see. And it took quite a while for them to kind of realize that, yes, in fact, we weren't trying to corrupt their morals or anything like that. And finally, we got in. But it ended up being quite a delay, probably an hour or two, dealing with these guys. You know, perhaps the first and only time I've had trouble getting into a place. Usually after a couple of weeks, they want me gone. But also on that trip, which was the trip of a lifetime, got to see a little more of the Chinese government in action when we went to, we took a day off to go to see the Great Wall of China. And you can't go to China without seeing the Great Wall. And so Steve Parr and myself, and we had a translator who was supplied by CTV. CTV had opened a bureau in Beijing, I think only 2 or 3 years prior to us being over there. And the reporter at the time was Jim Munson, who worked for CTV for many years, who then went on to the Canadian Senate. He's now known as Senator Jim Munson. And Jim so graciously provided his interpreter, a Chinese national, whose name I cannot remember, although I do have his card still at home. And he accompanied us throughout most of our shooting as a translator. But he also accompanied us on our day off when we went to the Great Wall. And while we were at the Great Wall, we noticed, and we did some shooting there for a feature. While we were there, we noticed a little kerfuffle breaking out. And we kind of walked over and didn't want to get too close because we were, you know, guests of the country, I guess. And anyway, there was a young gentleman, and there appeared to be a heated argument with two or three members of the Chinese, for lack of a better word, I'll call them the Chinese army. They were in army uniforms and that. And the discussion became quite loud, and then it became physical. And three or four of these fellows from the Chinese, officers from the Chinese army, began roughing up this guy. And they were going at him pretty good, and then finally carted him away. And we were able to find out through our interpreter that the individual was showing a little entrepreneurial spirit and was trying to sell tourists some postcards that weren't quite sanctioned by the communist government. In other words, he was trying to make a buck. He was trying to sell some tourists postcards, and the authorities were having none of it. You had to buy the official postcards from the Chinese government. So they kind of surrounded him and questioned him for a bit, and then they kind of roughed them up a little bit and took him away. I'm hoping for this guy's sake that was kind of the end of it. They just wanted him to stop selling postcards. But so that was two instances of dealing with Chinese authority. And the other thing I remember about China and with regards to travel and equipment was coming home. We left Beijing and flew again, I think, back through Quanzhou. And as anybody who travels internationally knows, oftentimes you have to get up very early to catch your flights. So we had to get up at around 3:30 or 4 in the morning to catch a flight to Hong Kong, where we were going to have a 12 or 13 hour layover. We go to bed early, but they had these banners on the side of the hotel we were at, and it was quite a windy night, and these banners were flapping all night. I don't think I got a minute's sleep. Up at 4, 4:30, fly to Hong Kong, 12 or 13 hour later, layover in Hong Kong to get on a flight to Canada, which is at that time was a 16 or 17 hour flight. We're returning home to Vancouver. As the flight is descending, it was a Cathay Pacific flight. The flight attendant gets on and starts telling connecting flights where to find the gates, et cetera, et cetera. And her final words are, "And for those of you continuing on Air Canada, we've just been informed they've gone on strike." So we've been up for about 24 hours. I don't sleep well on planes at the best of times. We're landing in Vancouver to find out Air Canada has gone on strike, and we're in Vancouver, and we've got to get back to Toronto. To make a long story very short, there was somebody at the Air Canada desk, and they honored the tickets, but you had to make alternate arrangements. So in the end, I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, we ended up flying from Vancouver to Seattle. We caught a flight from Seattle to Chicago, caught another flight from Chicago to Pittsburgh, and caught a flight from Pittsburgh to Toronto. Then, of course, we debarked and picked up our vehicle wherever the heck that was and drove back to Kitchener. I think at the time, if I remember correctly, from the time I got up in China, it was 42 hours later to get home, and I'd slept all of about, it seemed like 15 minutes, and it was perhaps the worst travel I've ever been involved in. When I got home, I was so tired, I couldn't even speak. It was incredible. It's fun to tell the story now, but it wasn't fun at the time, that's for sure.
This is the captain speaking. We have started our descent into Beijing. We'd like to thank Pete McCallum and, what happens on the road, stays on the road. We hope you'll fly with us again.